This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Annie Coleman in St. Louis, Missouri, in February 2006. The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. Chapter 18. Colonel Grangerford was a gentleman, you see. He was a gentleman all over, and so was his family. He was well born, as the saying is, and that's worth as much in a man as it is in a horse, so the Widow Douglas said, and nobody ever denied that she was of the first aristocracy in our town. And Pap, he always said it too, though it weren't no more quality than a mudcat in himself. Colonel Grangerford was very tall and very slim, and had a darkish pale complexion, not a sign of red in it anywheres. He was clean shaved every morning all over his thin face, and he had the thinnest kind of lips and the thinnest kind of nostrils and a high nose and heavy eyebrows and the blackest kind of eyes, sunk so deep back that they seemed like they was looking out of caverns at you, as you may say. His forehead was high, and his hair was black and straight and hung to his shoulders. His hands was long and thin, and every day of his life he put on a clean shirt and a full suit from head to foot, made out of linen so white it hurt your eyes to look at it. And on Sundays, he wore a blue tailcoat with brass buttons on it. He carried a mahogany cane with a silver head to it. There weren't no frivolousness about him, not a bit, and he weren't ever loud. He was as kind as he could be. You could feel that, you know. And so you had confidence. Sometimes he smiled, and it was good to see. But when he straightened himself up like a liberty pole, and the lightning begun to flicker out from under his eyebrows, you wanted to climb a tree first and find out what the matter was afterwards. He didn't ever have to tell anybody to mind their manners. Everybody was always good mannered where he was. Everybody loved to have him around, too. He was sunshine most always. I mean, he made it seem like good weather. When he turned into a cloud bank, it was awful dark for half a minute, and that was enough. There wouldn't nothing go wrong again for a week. When him and the old lady come down in the morning, all the family got up out of their chairs and give them good day, and then sat down again till they had sat down. Then Tom and Bob went to the sideboard where the decanter was and mixed a glass of bitters and handed it to him. And he held it in his hand and waited till Tom's and Bob's was mixed. And then they bowed and said, "Our duty to you, sir and madam." And they bowed the least bit in the world. and so they drank all three. And Bob and Tom poured a spoonful of water in the sugar and the mite of whiskey or apple brandy in the bottom of their tumblers and give it to me and Buck. And we drank to the old people, too. Bob was the oldest, and Tom next. Tall, beautiful men with very broad shoulders and brown faces and long black hair and black eyes. They dressed in white linen from head to foot like the old gentlemen and wore broad Panama hats. Then there was Miss Charlotte. She was 25 and tall and proud and grand, about as good as she could be when she weren't stirred up. But when she was, she had a look that would make you wilt in your tracks like her father. She was beautiful. So was her sister, Miss Sophia. But it was a different kind. She was gentle and sweet like a dove, and she was only 20. Each person had their own nigger to wait on them, Buck too. My nigger had a monstrous easy time because I weren't used to having anybody do anything for me. But Bucks was on the jump most of the time. This was all there was of the family now, but there used to be more. 3 sons, they got killed, and Emily Net died. The old gentleman owned a lot of farms and over 100 niggers. Sometimes a stack of people would come there horseback from 10 or 15 mile round and stay 5 or 6 days and have such junketings round about and on the river and dances and picnics in the woods daytimes and balls at the house nights. These people was mostly kinfolks of the family. The men brought their guns with them. It was a handsome lot of quality, I tell ya. There was another clan of aristocracy around there. 5 or 6 families, mostly of the same name of Shepherdson. They was as high-toned and well-born and rich and grand as the tribe of Grangerfords. The Shepherdsons and Grangerfords used the same steamboat landing, which was about 2 miles above our house. So sometimes when I went up there with a lot of our folks, I used to see a lot of the Shepherdsons there on their fine horses. One day, Buck and me was away out in the woods hunting and heard a horse coming. We was crossing the road. Buck says, "Quick, jump for the woods." We done it and then peeked down the woods through the leaves. Pretty soon, a splendid young man come galloping down the road, setting his horse easy and looking like a soldier. He had a gun across his pommel. I had seen him before. It was young Harney Shepherdson. I heard Buck's gun go off in my ear and Harney's hat tumbled off from his head. He grabbed his gun and rode straight to the place where we was hid. But we didn't wait. We started through the woods on a run. The woods weren't thick, so I looked over my shoulder to dodge a bullet. And twice I see Harney cover Buck with his gun. And then he rode away the way he come. We never stopped running till we got home. The old gentleman's eyes blazed a minute. 'Twas pleasure mainly, I judged. Then his face sort of smoothed down, and he says, kind of gentle, "I don't like shooting from behind a bush. Why didn't you step into the road, my boy?" "The Shepherdsons don't, Father. They always take advantage." Miss Charlotte, she held her head up like a queen while Buck was telling his tale, and her nostrils spread and her eyes snapped. The two young men looked dark, but never said nothing. Miss Sophia, she turned pale, but the color come back when she found the man weren't hurt. Soon as I could get Buck down by the corn cribs under the tree by ourselves, I says, "Did you want to kill him, Buck?" "Well, I bet I did." "What did he do to you?" "Him? He never done nothing to me." "Well, then, what did you want to kill him for?" "Why, nothing, only it's on account of the feud." "What's a feud?" "Why, where was you raised? Don't you know what a feud is?" "Never heard of it before. Tell me about it." "Well," says Buck, "a feud is this way. A man has a quarrel with another man and kills him. Then that other man's brother kills him. Then the other brothers on both sides boast for one another. Then the cousins chip in. And by and by, everybody's killed off and there ain't no more feud. But it's kind of slow and takes a long time." "Has this one been going on long, Buck?" "Well, I should reckon. It started 30 years ago, or summers along there. There was trouble about something, and then a lawsuit settled it, and the suit went again one of the men. So he up and shot the man that won the suit, which you would naturally do, of course. Anybody would." "What was the trouble about, Buck? Land?" "I reckon maybe. I don't know." "Well, who done the shooting? Was it a Grangerford or a Shepherdson?" "Laws, how do I know? It was so long ago." "Don't anybody know?" "Oh, yes, Pa knows, I reckon, and some of the other old people. But they don't know now what the row was about in the first place." "Has there been many killed, Buck?" "Yes, right smart chance funerals. But they don't always kill. Pa's got a few buckshot in him, but he don't mind it 'cause he don't weigh much anyway. Bob's been carved up some with a bowie, and Tom's been hurt once or twice." "Has anybody been killed this year, Buck?" "Yes, we got one and they got one. About 3 months ago, my cousin Bud, 14-year-old, was riding through the woods on the other side of the river and didn't have no weapon with him, which is blame foolishness. And in a lonesome place, he hears a horse a-coming behind him and sees old Baldy Shepherdson a-linking after him with his gun in his hand and his white hair a-flying in the wind. Instead of jumping off and taking to the bush, could outrun him, so they had it nip and tuck for 5 mile or more. The old man had gaining all the time, so at last Bud seen it weren't any use, so he stopped and faced around so as to have the bullet holes in front, you know. And the old man, he rode up and shot him down. But he didn't get much chance to enjoy his luck, for inside of a week, our folks laid him out. I reckon that old man was a coward, Buck. I reckon he weren't a coward, not by a blame sight. There ain't a coward amongst them Shepherdsons, not a one. And there ain't no cowards amongst the Grangerfords either. Why, that old man kept up his end in a fight one day for half an hour against 3 Grangerfords and come out winner. That was all horseback. He lit off his horse and got behind a little wood pile and kept his horse before him to stop the bullets. But the Grangerfords stayed on their horses and capered around the old man and peppered away at him, and he peppered away at them. Him and his horse both went running pretty leaky and crippled, but the Grangerfords had to be fetched home, and one of them was dead, and another died the next day. No, sir, if a body's out hunting for cowards, he don't want to fool away any time amongst them Shepherdsons, 'cause they don't breed any of that kind. Next Sunday, we all went to church, about 3 mile, everybody a horseback. The men took their guns along, and so did Buck, and kept them between their knees or stood them handy against the wall. The Shepherdsons done the same. It was pretty ornery preaching, all about brotherly love and such like tiresomeness, but everybody said it was a good sermon, and they all talked it over going home. Had such a powerful lot to say about faith and good works and free grace and preforeordination and I don't know what all, that it did seem to me to be one of the roughest Sundays I had run across yet. About an hour after dinner, everybody was dozing around, some in their chairs and some in their rooms, and it got to be pretty dull. Buck and a dog was stretched out on the grass in the sun, sound asleep. I went up to our room and judged I would take a nap myself. I found that sweet Miss Sophia standing in her door, which was next to ours, and she took me in her room and shut the door very soft and asked me if I liked her, and I said I did, and she asked me if I would do something for her and not tell anybody, and I said I would. Then she said she forgot her testament and left it in the seat at church between 2 other books, and would I slip out quiet and go there and fetch it to her and not say nothing to nobody? I said I would. So I slid out and slipped off up the road, and there weren't anybody at the church except maybe a hog or two, for there weren't any lock on the door, and hogs likes a punching floor in summertime because it's cool. If you notice, most folks don't go to church only when they've got to, but a hog is different. Says I to myself, something's up. It ain't natural for a girl to be in such a sweat about a testament. So I give it a shake, and out drops a little piece of paper with 2:30 wrote on it with a pencil. I ransacked it, but couldn't find anything else. I couldn't make anything out of that, so I put the paper in the book again, and when I got home and upstairs, there was Miss Sophia in her door waiting for me. She pulled me in and shut the door. Then she looked in the testament till she found the paper, and as soon as she read it, she looked glad. And before a body could think, she grabbed me and gave me a squeeze and said I was the best boy in the world, and not to tell anybody. She was mighty red in the face for a minute, and her eyes lighted up, and it made her powerful pretty. I was a good deal astonished, but when I got my breath, I asked her what the paper was about, and she asked me if I had read it, and I said no. And she asked me if I could read writing, and I told her, no, only coarse hand. And then she said the paper weren't anything but a book marked to keep her place, and I might go and play now. I went off down to the river, studying over this thing, and pretty soon I noticed that my nigger was following along behind. When we was out of sight of the house, he looked back and around a second, and then comes a running and says, Master George, if you'll come down into the swamp, I'll show you a whole stack of water moccasins. Thinks I, that's mighty curious. He said that yesterday. He ought to know body don't love water moccasins enough to go around hunting for them. What is he up to anyway? So I says, all right, trot ahead. I followed a half mile. Then he struck out over the swamp and waded ankle deep as much as another half mile. We come to a little flat piece of land which was dry and very thick with trees and bushes and vines. And he says, you shove right in there just a few steps, Mars George. That's what they is. I see them before. I don't care to see them no more. Then he slopped right along and went away, and pretty soon the trees hid him. I poked into the place a ways and come to a little open patch as big as a bedroom, all hung around with vines, and found a man laying there asleep. And by jinks, it was my old Jim. I waked him up and I reckoned it was going to be a grand surprise to him to see me again, but it weren't. He nearly cried, he was so glad, but he weren't surprised. Said he swum along behind me that night and heard me yell every time, but doesn't answer, because he didn't want nobody to pick him up and take him into slavery again. Says he, I got hurt a little and couldn't swim fast, so I was considerable ways behind you towards the last. When you landed, I reckoned I could catch up with you on the land without having to shout at you. When I see that house, I begin to go slow. I's off to fur to hear what they say to you. afraid of the dogs. But when it was all quiet again, I knowed you was in the house. So I struck out for the woods to wait for day. Early in the morning, some of the niggers come along, going to the fields. And they took me and showed me this place, where the dogs can't track me on account of the water. And they bring me truck to eat every night, and tells me how he's a-getting along. Why didn't you tell my Jack to fetch me here sooner, Jim? Well, 'twarn't no use to disturb you, Huck, till we could do something. But we's all right now. I've been a-buying pots and pans and victuals, and I got a chance in a-patching up the raft nights when... What raft, Jim? Our old raft. You mean to say our old raft weren't smashed all the flinders? No, she weren't. She was tore up a good deal. One end of her was, but there weren't no great harm done. Only our traps was most all lost. If we hadn't dived so deep and swum so far underwater, and the night hadn't been so dark, and we weren't so scared, and been such pumpkin heads as the saying is, we'd have seen the raft. But it's just as well we didn't, 'cause now she's all fixed up again, most as good as new. And we's got a new lot of stuff in the place of what is lost. Why, how did you get hold of the raft again, Jim? Did you catch her? How am I going to catch her and I out in the woods? No, some of the niggers found her catched on a snag along here in the bend, and they hid her in a creek amongst the willows. And they was so much jawing about which of them she belonged to the most that I come to hear about it pretty soon. So I ups and settles the trouble by telling them she don't belong to none of them but to you and me. And I asked them if they was going to grab the young white gentleman's property and get a hiding for it. Then I give them 10 cents apiece, and they is mighty well satisfied, and wished some more rafts to come along and make them rich again. They's mighty good to me, these niggers is, and whatever I want them to do for me, I don't have to ask them twice, honey. That Jack's a good nigger, and pretty smart. Yes, he is. He ain't ever told me he was here. Told me to come and he'd show me a lot of water moccasins. If anything happens, he ain't mixed up in it. He can say he never seen us together and it'll be the truth. I don't want to talk much about the next day. I reckon I'll cut it pretty short. I waked up about dawn and was a-going to turn over and go to sleep again when I noticed how still it was. Didn't seem to be anybody stirring. That weren't usual. Next, I noticed that Buck was up and gone. Well, I gets up a-wondering and goes downstairs. Nobody around, everything is still as a mouse, just the same outside. Thinks I, what does it mean? Down by the wood pile, I comes across my Jack and says, what's it all about? Says he, don't you know Mars George? No, says I don't. Well then, Miss Sophia's run off, deed she has. run off in the night sometime. Nobody don't know just when. Run off to get married to that young harness Shepton, you know. Least away so they speck. The family finally died by a half hour ago. Maybe a little more. And I tell you, they won't no time lost. Such another hurrying up guns and horses you never see. The woman folks is gone for to stir up their relations. And old Marsall and the boys tucked their guns and rode up the river road for to try to catch that young man and kill him before he can get across the river with Miss Sophia. I reckon they's going to be mighty rough times. Buck went off that way to meet you up. Well, I reckon he did. They weren't going to mix you up in it. Marsha Buck, he loaded up his gun and loud he's going to fetch home at Shepperton or bust. Well, there'll be plenty of them there, I reckon. And you bet you he'll fetch one if he gets a chance. I took up the river road as hard as I could put. By and by, I began to hear guns a good ways off. When I came inside the log store in the woodpile where the steamboats land, I worked along under the trees and brush till I got to a good place. And then I clumb up into the forks of a cottonwood that was out of reach and watched. There was a wood rank 4 foot high a little ways in front of the tree. And first I was going to hop behind that, but maybe it was luckier I didn't. There was 4 or 5 men cavorting around on their horses in the open place before the log store, cussing and yelling and trying to get at a couple of young chaps that was behind the wood rank alongside of the steamboat landing. But they couldn't come it. Every time one of them showed himself on the riverside of the woodpile, he got shot at. The two boys was squatting back to back behind the pile so they could watch both ways. By and by, the men stopped cavorting around and yelling. They started riding towards the store. Then up gets one of the boys, draws a steady bead over the wood rank, and drops one of them out of his saddle. All the men jumped off of their horses and grabbed the hurt one and started to carry him to the store. In that minute, the two boys started on the run. They got halfway to the tree I was in before the men noticed. Then the men seed them and jumped on their horses and took out after them. They gained on the boys, but it didn't do no good. The boys had too good a start. They got to the woodpile that was in front of my tree and slipped in behind it, and so they had the bulge on the men again. One of the boys was Buck, and the other was a slim young chap, about 19 years old. The men ripped around a while and then rode away. As soon as they was out of sight, I sung out to Buck and told him. He didn't know what to make of my voice coming out of the tree at first. He was awful surprised. He told me to watch out sharp and let him know when the men come inside again, and said they was up to some devilment or other, wouldn't be gone long. I wished I was out of that tree, but I dasn't come down. Buck begun to cry and rip, and the other young chap will make up for this day yet. He said his father and his two brothers was killed, and two or three of the enemy. Said the shepherdsons laid for them an ambush. Buck said his father and brothers ought to wait for their relations. Shepherdsons was too strong for them. I asked him what was become of young Harney and Miss Sophia. He said they got across the river and was safe. I was glad of that, but the way Buck did take on, because he didn't manage to kill Harney that day he shot at him, I ain't ever heard anything like it. All of a sudden, bang, 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 goes three or four guns. The men had slipped around through the woods and come in from behind them without their horses. The boys jumped for the river, both of them hurt, and as they swam down the current, the men run along the bank, shooting at them and singing out, "Kill them! Kill them!" It made me so sick I almost fell out of the tree. I ain't a-going to tell all that happened. It would make me sick again if I was to do that. I wished I hadn't ever come ashore that night to see such things. I ain't ever going to get shut of them. Lots of times I dream about them. I stayed in the tree till it began to get dark, afraid to come down. Sometimes I heard guns away off in the woods, and twice I seen little gangs of men gallop past the log store with guns. So I reckon the trouble was still going on. I was mighty downhearted, so I made up my mind I wouldn't ever go near that house again, because I reckoned I was to blame somehow. I judged that piece of paper meant that Miss Sophia was to meet Harney somewheres at 2:30 and run off, and I judged I ought to told her father about that paper and the curious way she acted. Then maybe he would have locked her up and this awful mess would never happened. When I got down out of the tree, I crept along down the riverbank piece and found the two bodies laying in the edge of the water and tugged at them till I got them ashore. Then I covered up their faces and got away as quick as I could. I cried a little when I was covering up Buck's face, for he was mighty good to me. It was just dark now. I never went near the house, but struck through the woods and made for the swamp. Jim weren't on his island, so I tramped off in a hurry for the creek and crowded through the willows, red hot to jump aboard and get out of that awful country. The raft was gone. My souls, but I was scared. I couldn't get my breath for most a minute. Then I raised a yell. A voice not 25 feet from me says, "Gulan, is that you, honey? Don't make no noise." It was Jim's voice. Nothing ever sounded so good before. I run along the bank a piece and got aboard. And Jim, he grabbed me and hugged me. He was so glad to see me. He says, "Laws bless you, child. I was right down shore you's dead. again? Jack's been here. He said he reckons you's been shot 'cause you didn't come home no more. So I was just this minute starting to raft down towards the mouth of the creek so's to be all ready for to shove out and leave soon as Jack comes again and tells me for certain you is dead. Lawsy, I's mighty glad to get you back again, honey. I says, all right, that's mighty good. They won't find me, and they'll think I've been killed and floated down the river. There's something up there that'll help them think so. So don't you lose no time, Jim, but just shove off of the big water as fast as ever you can. I never felt easy till the raft was 2 miles below there and out in the middle of the Mississippi. Then we hung up our signal lantern and judged that we was free and safe once more. I hadn't had a bite to eat since yesterday, so Jim, he got out some corn dodgers and buttermilk and pork and cabbage and greens. There ain't nothing in the world so good when it's cooked right. And whilst I eat my supper, we talked and had a good time. I was powerful glad to get away from the feuds, and so was Jim to get away from the swamp. We said there weren't no home like a raft after all. Other places do seem so cramped up and smothery, but a raft don't. You feel mighty free and easy and comfortable on a raft.